Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I shortchanged the listeners on the Bruce last game, and a few people pointed that out. So,
oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, well, that was for them. And for the Oilers. Big win tonight, Bruce. Huge.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. My pulse has kind of calmed back down again. The last few minutes was building to a higher level. And then they actually did a pretty darn good job those last few minutes of not letting really any, didn't need any miracle saves or anything. You know, it was pretty decently controlled for a game where the Oilers got outshot by 20 shots, 33-13, and yet somehow found a way to come out on top of a 1-0 final score.
So yeah, they did it, Bruce. We'll get into how they did it. Let's not have any further preamble. Let's get right to it because it's really late. Thank you, Sportsnet, for scheduling the game at minus 11 o'clock, whatever it was, Eastern time. Those poor people in Eastern Canada who are Oilers fans. All right, Bruce, two good things, bad things, two numbers and one conundrum. We will go with two good things each. What is your first good thing, Amundo?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Evan Bouchard tonight. I thought he had a very fine game. Of course, highlighted by the one goal that was scored on this game on a prototypical Bouch bomb on the power play, a one-timer set up beautifully by McDavid and Draisaitl. You really couldn't ask for a much more satisfying goal than the one that was scored in this game by the Oilers. And Bouch just absolutely ripped one from, you know, above the circles. But the way it was set up, David Rittich didn't really have a chance to cover the far post because the puck was coming from his glove side corner, and Bouch just bombed it in there before he could get over and make the stop, and that was the difference. But I like Bouch's game in a lot of different ways. At first, I thought LA's trying to run this guy right out of the building. You know, they had took a few runs at him, and he didn't back off even a little tiny bit. He was in there, just calmly moving the puck, getting it going in the right direction, getting it out. And he was laying on, I thought, a couple of hits of his own, and he just was, he's shown this a little bit before that in the playoffs, he can pick it up and play a little bit of a, you know, or put a little rougher edge on his game, and I think it looks just fine on him. And I thought he was, he played 22 and a half minutes tonight. There wasn't hardly any special teams. So, he was, all the defensemen pretty fairly shared the ice time and blocked a couple shots, had a couple shots on net. But most of his best work, I thought, was basically controlling play, getting possession of pucks in his own end and making decent passes, whether in zone or breaking out of it, and putting the puck in good places and not panicking, which is one of his strengths.
Yeah,
sometimes
it really
he thinks
is.
He needs to, you know, he's not urgent enough some nights, you think, but tonight he found that balance, I thought, just right, and thought he delivered a powerhouse performance.
Super sharp with the puck and without it, you know, he, there was, I thought on that goal, he actually changed the angle on his shot. I think he was backing up just a little bit to, as he was in the shooting motion, which changes the angle on the for the goalie. And it was one of the reasons that he was able to score, although it was just a wicked, wicked shot. You know, he made a great play just earlier. He had pinched to keep the puck in, and he set up McDavid down low for what, you know, the Oilers hadn't had a lot of great chances early in the game. He didn't have many great chances throughout the game, but McDavid got that pass in front. He couldn't get off a shot because he was all he was in an awkward position when he got the pass, but he did set up Bouchard for a great shot then. Bouchard's was so strong defensively in that game, Bruce, that he earned some praise from none other than Kevin Bieksa, who is the sharpest commentator, other than he and Ray Ferraro. I don't know where Ray's working now, but
I hear him on American station once in a while.
Yeah, I think working regularly. Yeah. We just don't see him, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But Bieksa is excellent, and he's very sparing in his praise of the Oilers, because I think Bieksa senses what we all sense, mm-hmm. that this team isn't going to go anywhere, Bruce, until they get their defensive game together, until they figure it out defensively. They're not winning the Stanley Cup. So he knows that from being a playoff performer and a very experienced NHLer, an excellent NHLer. So he's always pretty sparing in his praise of the Oilers. But tonight, he singled out Bouchard. He said he was playing really very, very sharp defensive hockey. And he also singled out Darnell Nurse, saying if Nurse keeps it simple, he's an excellent defender. So that was interesting to see. So a rarity, I will suggest. Bruce, my good thing, well, I'll go with Stu Skinner. Now, I gave him a 10 out of 10. And usually... in a game where there's not more grade A shots, I won't give a 10 out of 10, even if it's a shutout. But this was the playoffs. This was a tight game. The Kings had 10 grade A shots. The Oilers had 6. Mm-hmm. So this was about the most low event game of the year, I think, we've seen for grade A shots.
For 5 alarms.
Yeah, and for 5 alarms, it was 2-1 for the Oilers. So there was only one on Skinner that was a 5 alarm, but nonetheless it was just endless tricky moments, tons of pressure in the Oilers zone, tons of puck possession from the Kings in the Oilers zone. He worked hard this game, and he had all kinds of very, very difficult moments to handle. He looked confident from word go. He looked solid in his net from word go. Mm-hmm. So I think he was the beneficiary of some really good defensive play by the Oilers in the defensive slot. But when he was called upon, he was outstanding. They threw the kitchen sink at the guy in terms of offensive pressure. Mm-hmm. And he put it right in he screwed it right into place.
Well, how many California attempts did he face in this game? It seemed 15 in the first period. Fire pucks from outside into traffic, and they were creating all kinds of traffic around in front of him and getting these shots from, you know, weird angles and stuff, but, you know, into the slot. And it was a matter of the right deflection, which they never did get. But they did get a couple, and he stopped those. And he was, like you say, I agree, he had to work hard. And, you know, 10, you know, when you break down a 10, you know, it's really... 1-0, right?
They might have set a record for California in attempts, Bruce, in that game. I mean, they were just constantly firing from the point. What is your second good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Leon Draisaitl, who not only did he make the expert pass to tee up that Bush bomb that won the game for the Oilers, but I thought he helped win the game in a number of different ways. It just had a very strong, to me, 200-foot game. And I know that the possession numbers, well, they don't really favor any of the Oilers in a game where they got outshot 33-13. And honestly, I had some questions about the LA shot keeper. It would seem like when the Oilers would get a shot, their total would go down by one. That happened more than once. So I wonder how LA had all these great shot shares this year. Maybe we should look at home road splits for this one, because the home guy has got some interesting ideas about what isn't a shot for the other team. Leon had a couple of very good shots of his own. A great one with about 6 minutes left in the third, or 8 minutes left, right after the one LA power play, which Edmonton killed. And of course, they put out the big three. And it was a really nice three-way passing play, setting up Leon in front. But more than that, I loved his defensive game. He had two of Edmonton's five takeaways in this game and three blocked shots, which is a lot for a forward. And he was also 61% in the dot, and that included in the last 8 seconds a big-time face-off win against Anze Kopitar to pull the puck into the corner. And then he went out into the middle of the zone and blocked the desperation point shot that was just trying to get the puck into traffic, you know, for banging away at it with 2 seconds left. And it never got through because Leon was in the way blocking it and clearing it out, and that was that. And I thought his attention to detail on the defensive side of the puck was very, very good in this game. And
I really agree, Bruce. I think he's really been coming on, and like he's still not an excellent defensive player. His defensive instincts aren't top drawer, but his effort is definitely there. He's putting in the hard work on defense. He's trying to get it right. And, you know, Kane mm-hmm. Kane's still a bit of a mess in his own zone. Like when it goes out to the point and Kane's there, that's the last thing I want to see. But Leon's covering for him. I mean, Kane's trying to, and he's getting it done. He was like the Oilers in the first period. They were really, the Kings really came hard in the first period, but Leon was one of the first to try to rev it up for the Oilers and get it going. And he charged up ice a few times. He set up Kane once, Nurse once. And he broke in for his own grade A shot in the first. So right from the start of the game, he was trying to take command. And the key to this series is if his line doesn't get outscored by the Kopitar line, I think the Oilers will win the game. That's what happened tonight. Like they played it even, and they weren't always out there against the Kopitar line. But that's a key for the Oilers. I like the McDavid line out there against the Kopitar line. I think that's a good matchup for the Oilers, and they did get that quite a bit. But Drysdale also had his moments where he had to defend, and he did well.
Yeah, mostly he played against Dano, Moore, and Arvidsson.
Yeah, that's better for the Oilers.
Over 10 minutes against, in fact, the entire quintet, Gavrikov and Roy is part of that duo, and he played 10 minutes plus against all five of those guys. So that was the primary matchup. And, you know, that in a road game, the matchup is not determined by the Oilers coach near as much as it is by the opposing teams.
That's interesting that they wanted Kopitar out there against McDavid then. Like I think that's a mistake by the Kings coach, frankly, because that Kopitar line is their best offensive line. But anyway, Bruce, my second good thing is the fourth line of the Oilers, Ryan, Janmark, and Dylan Holloway. there was a couple times in the game where the Oilers, the Kings were putting pressure on the Oilers constantly, but there was a couple times where they needed a line change, for instance, and the puck got shot down the ice, and Dylan Holloway just charged as hard as he could down the ice. This happened at least twice, once with Englund in the first, and then once again in the second or the third. And because he charged so hard, the Kings then had to retreat further into their own zone, which allowed the line change. That kind of hustle goes a long way in a hockey game. That is a really veteran play to be self-aware enough to know that you're not going to get the puck, but if you charge up there and get on that defenseman, he won't be able to quickly make a pass, and your guys are going to be able to get off. Janmark is a specialist at that. His actual specialty is advancing the puck himself and then holding it in the opposition end so everyone can change. But good work by Holloway on this one. I thought Derek Ryan he had a really good game. And he was trusted, he and DeHarnay, in the last minute there by the coach. It's no obvious why. They're both outstanding defensive hockey players, very smart, very responsible. And he was part of the penalty kill, Derek Ryan was, as was DeHarnay. A number of players were out of the penalty kill, CC, on, and Nuge. That was absolutely crucial that they kill off that penalty. Ryan was part of that. So Derek Ryan also set up Dylan Holloway for a nice one-timer shot in the first period. So they got a little bit done on the attack. They gave up very, very little on defense. They were trusted by the coach And they were that happened because they're trustworthy players.
You want to see trusted by the coach, Derek Ryan, in this game, played 9 minutes and 38 seconds. And in totally played 17 shifts. He played four shifts in the last 5 minutes of the game.
Oh, they went
all long shifts, 32 seconds, 35 seconds, 20 seconds, and you know, and this was like he played three shifts in the last 3 minutes, and including right down to 14 seconds. He changed on the fly just before Skinner froze the puck for that last faceoff. And in part because, you know, he's the right shot faceoff man. And it seemed like there was a million draws on the left dot of the offensive zone from LA's perspective. So, and he wasn't taking a ton of faceoffs, but they trusted him to be out there. And I mean, in the last minute, he's out there with McDavid, you know, guarding the points and making sure that there's no lanes left open. You know, the thing that you were just talking about, Kane on the blue line, well, Ryan is almost the polar opposite of that. He's always in the, you know, he knows his angles and seems to be in the right place, and he doesn't give up much for free. And
yeah,
he was clearly highly trusted. I mean, for a guy who never even played in the series, comes in and plays under 10 minutes, but he has four shifts in the last 5 minutes. That's quite spectacular.
What is your bad thing, Bruce?
Yeah, it wasn't a lot bad, and I don't want to whine about this or that hit or call or whatever. So I will whine instead about the ice in LA, which I think is pretty poor at any time. You know, in December, it's not that great, and it's certainly not wonderful. And, you know, it's very hard to make clean, precise plays. There's a lot of bouncing pucks, and I mean, especially the part of that was just the style of play. You know, there was every puck was a battle, so there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to make you know, whiz smooth passes stick to stick. But I just didn't think the ice there is all that great. And I think much as I don't mind a game that has a lot of battles in it, you know, I'd still like to see some of the skill that I think the iffy ice detracts from that aspect of the game.
Might have not have favored the Kings, right? Because they were on the attack trying to make passes all game. They had, you know, they had the foot on the pedal and they couldn't execute when they needed to. Yeah, too bad for them. yeah, I know this is a conundrum. This is a conundrum of itself, picking the bad things, because this was a really solid game. And I think the lowest mark was a 6 in this game, because this is the kind of game that the Oilers need to play to win the Stanley Cup. And when players do that, just great team defensive play. And I'm hesitant to criticize anyone. But I will say this, that I think there's two players who on offense, or like two players on the attack in terms of their two-way game, I mean, who have yet to bring their A game in the playoffs. And they're really crucial players, are Fogle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And they've got to find a way. Nuge has got to find a way to just execute a little bit better on the attack. Maybe the ice really affected a player like him because he is so good with the puck. And I mean, Bieksa praised Nugent-Hopkins after the first period. So I'm going against the grain of that, but I didn't think he was particularly, you know, there was one bad sequence where he let Arvidsson in on a couple wraparound chances and a good rebound chance, which were dangerous. And I just don't see him making a lot of plays. He did make a really strong play on the penalty kill, though, so that bumped his mark up to a 6 from a 5. So it's not like he was bad this game, but he hasn't brought his A game in any of the first four games. And I would say the same thing about Fogle. Fogle in the loss actually was a culprit on a couple of the goals against.
Yes.
And those were key moments. That got him, I think, bumped off that line, those plays.
Yes.
Bumped off the Draisaitl line. And he's still figuring it out right now. That line of McLeod, Fogle, and Perry, I think, is a good line. But Holloway's outplaying Warren Fogle. Holloway's outplaying Nugent Hopkins. I mean, it's not time yet to bump anyone down, I don't think,
right,
further. But Holloway's making a case for it. with his speed and hustle and shooting ability, he's having an impact on a game, and those two players are not really doing it. So maybe they'll figure it out next game. Maybe they'll be the stars. We can, fingers crossed. You know, this is a bit of a recurring story with Nugent Hopkins in the playoffs. He's had some great games in the playoffs, but in the last 2 years, he has been starred in the playoffs. And I think he really needs to figure out a way to make more of an impact at this time of year.
I'd like to see him play with a little more edge.
Yeah.
He does have it, and he has it sporadically. And the games that he plays an edgy style, and, you know, get some sneaky hits in and just raises a compete level. There's one for your bingo card. A compete level for puck battles along the walls, especially in the defensive zone. And when he plays with that little bit of edginess, and, you know, does the reverse hits that he can do, and just tiny bit more determination, and he can be extremely effective in puck battles or anything else. Like, he's got a whole lot of game. And right now, I'm just not quite seeing his A game either.
Yeah, it might not be the easiest line to play on with Dreisaitl and Kane. Like, they are idiosyncratic players, I'll suggest.
Yes.
So he's quirky. The reads are not always easy, I don't think. And maybe the idea should be to move him to the top line with McDavid and Hyman and Henrique on that line. And that might work to get Nuge going, because Hyman and McDavid are far more predictable players. So I don't know. I'll just leave it at that. Bruce, what is your numero?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the number 3. And I'm pretty sure I'm right that this was the third time in the history of the Oilers that they won a nothing game in the playoffs. The others being fairly epic, a 1-0 game in game 1 of the 1984 Stanley Cup Finals at Nassau County Coliseum, that springboarded the Oilers to their first Stanley Cup. Kevin McClellan was the hero with the third period goal. And then there was one less remembered one at Dallas in 97. This was the series that ultimately Todd Marchant won in game 7 in overtime in Dallas. Well, in game 5, it was 0-0 through 3 periods. It was 0-0 through 4 periods. And then in the first minute of the second overtime period, the Oilers got perhaps the most unlikely goal of all, the Smitty Slapper.
He wasn't known for his gun.
Well, he was known for taking a prayer outside slapper that never went in. Uh-huh. And people couldn't even understand, why does he bother with that thing? It never works. Well, it worked this one time, and it apparently incentivized him to keep doing it. But it worked at a very key time, one game 5 in Dallas, 1-0, when he beat former teammate, that's not right for him, when he beat former Oiler, Andy Moog, to suddenly, out of the blue, decide when it had been a scoreless game for 4 periods. And this, I think, is the third one. And the Bush Bomb is a little bit more of a sort of reliable weapon than the Smitty Slapper or Kevin McClelland ever scoring. But whatever, you take your goal where it comes. And if you can keep all the ones out of your net, fantastic. It's a very tense way to win a hockey game. But when it's over, it feels good.
Indeed. Bruce, my number is Cody Ceci's, what's known as Corsi, his shots at net, plus minus at even strength. So he was on the ice for 8 shots at net and for 37 against, 8-4 and 37 against. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm going to suggest, you know, often, in my opinion, these shots numbers don't tell the story of a player's game at all. They don't come close. Cody Ceci was really good this game. He won so many battles. Bruce, he kept a clean sheet throughout the game. He didn't make a major mistake on a grade A shot against, either at even strength or on his time on the penalty kill all game long, playing tough minutes. Cody Ceci kept it clean. He was just really good. So, I think it obviously that tells us he was in his own end for a long time.
Right.
That's what Corsi tells you. Where the player was most often on the ice.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily tell you though how he performed in the game. If you're going to use it as a sum of his performance, I think that you're often mistaken doing that, because the sum of Cody Ceci's performance tonight was good to great. Like, I mean, I gave him a 7. I could see giving him an 8. He was that good. So, what did you think?
I loved his game. I thought he was an absolute rock in the defensive zone. He was always in position. He was always in the way. He was he hardly lost any battles, and you know, the play was down there a lot of the time. LA was bringing it, but they were bringing it only so far, and they were really not penetrating. And despite the fact that his numbers, the Nurse was even, 6 to 35, and Nurse was a little bit shakier, certainly, than Ceci was. He got beat for a couple chances, but honestly, I can't remember one. And as you say, there are none showing on our sheet where Cody Ceci got beat on a play that actually developed into anything dangerous. To me, he was just a rock solid defensive player with nothing going on offensively. And tonight, that was good enough. He was Chris Tanev in this game, which was the guy everybody wanted to get.
Yeah, I watched Tanev. I watched that Dallas, a lot of the Dallas Vegas game. Tanev is a really good hockey player. I think he is a little bit better than Ceci now, having watched him play in that pressure game. I was sure glad Dallas won that game, by the way. Like, you don't want to see you don't want to see the LA breeze through, or Las Vegas breeze through, I should say, because
I don't want to see Las Vegas win at all.
Neither do I. I just want to see them out of the playoffs. The quicker, the better. I hope we all get our wish. I think the entire NHL is hoping for that, outside of people in Vegas. So if they feel like, if they're using that for their bulletin board material, like, good for you, Vegas. But everyone else just really wants to see you out because of the way that they've managed the cap. All right. Our conundrum, Bruce, is the Oilers did it. They played the kind of defensive game they need to play to win the Stanley Cup tonight. Can they do it again? Can they do it on home ice in game 5 in a closeout game? What say you?
Yeah, this is a big test. I mean, surely the last thing they want to do at this point is make another trip to Los Angeles and another trip back to Edmonton, which they'd have to make after game 6, win or lose game 6. But in a perfect world, they take care of business on their home sheet on Wednesday night, and then they get a few days off before going to the next series. The strange thing is, in 2 games at home, they allowed 9 goals. In 2 games in LA, they gave in one goal against in 2 games. They completely turned that defense around. So hopefully that means they've turned it around, but they're going to have to prove that by, continuing to play staunch defensive hockey and get great goaltending back in Edmonton that they got here in LA over these last 2 games.
Yeah, as I say this year with the Oilers, I'm from Missouri. I got to see it to believe it with the Oilers on defense, because there's just been too much of it where they don't do it. Mm-hmm. But I think at least it probably, 3 out of the 4 games here, they've played really good defense against the Kings in this series. And there was one. The
7-4 game was mostly decent defense with a couple of real strange bounces.
Was really good on defense as well. That might have been their best game of the series. Probably it was. But there was one play late in the game that gave me hope for the next game. And the Kings were putting pressure on it. McDavid's line was out there with Henrique and Hyman. I can't recall the defenseman. Maybe Bouchard and Ekholm. Anyway, they were putting a lot of pressure on, and it looked like they were going to score. And then finally, there's a puck battle in the corner, and Henrique wins it, puts it behind the net, I think, to McDavid. And there was just some really calm passing under pressure in that moment. Some super calm, slow it down, find a little space, make a quick smart pass, and then they advanced it out. That's the kind of play the old Oilers never made, I don't think. That kind of calm execution under pressure, when there's been like 20 or 30 seconds of real pressure from the other team to pass the puck around like that and advance it out. That's more far. I shouldn't say they never made it. Obviously they made it now and then, but you know what I mean? It's the kind of play they make more often.
Trademark.
It was. The trademark was try to fire it up the boards, get an icing call, or turn over the puck was the trademark. Now the trademark is more often, like they pull off this kind of smart, sharp passing, calm, savvy defensive play more often. And that does give me hope. There's a lot that gives me hope that this team has turned the corner in terms of their defensive play. There is a ton. But again, have to just grind out that defensive game again and again and again, and that's how you win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, you can't start thinking, well, we got them down 3-1. We got them going back home. We got them where we want them. You know,
that's right.
You got to, no, we want to finish these guys off in the first opportunity. We're going to give them our best game and hope they can't match it. You know, one thing the Oilers have been doing, you've probably noticed it too, and many in the audience as well. When they win a faceoff in the defensive zone and they win it back to the defenseman, over and over again, that guy's play is to scoop the puck out of the zone, the high lob play out into the neutral zone. And it's like a punt, you know, it goes back to the other team, but, you know, many yards downfield. And sometimes you can get out there and battle for it, but, you know, the first thing they do is get the thing out of here. Harn Ryan keeps using the word hoist when he's talking about how they're and sometimes dumping pucks in, but much more often dumping them out, especially off face-offs. It seems like that's sort of plan A. You win the draw, dump it. And that's the Paul Coffey influences to me, because Paul was one of the great lobbers of the puck that I've ever seen. He would just scoop that thing and it would go up near the clock and it would come down and, you know, land in the neutral zone or the far blue line very, very consistently. He turned it, you know, it looks like a plumber play, but, you know, he requires a particular skill to be able to make that shot. And some of the D-men are better at it than others, but a lot of them seem to be trying it. And, you know, mostly it goes out when they do it. You know, it's not like they under-lob it and it goes to the guy on the point. It goes high and out and then, you know, tick, 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 while the other guys are recovering the puck and trying to get it back in.
You know, I think in other playoff series, the Oilers played one or two really solid defensive games in total, like against LA, they play seven games and they'd have one or two really solid defensive games.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and often in the games where they wouldn't get scored on much, they just dominated the play on the attack more than anything. But this is the first time I think we've seen like 3 out of 4. So let's, if we can get to 4 out of 5 with a solid defensive game, that'll be a really, this was an outstanding signal tonight. If you're looking for signals that the Oilers have finally figured it out, this was a good signal, but, we'll see. They got to show us in game 5. We'll see what they do.
And folks might say, well, what do you mean? They got outshot 13-3 in the third period, but it was like 12-2 with 6 or 7 minutes left, and then there was no more. And really, the 12 was sort of a deceptive number because a lot of it was, you know, shots from outside being funneled on net, and, you know, a couple dangerous shots for sure, but mostly. And as it got down more and more into crunch time, I thought Edmonton got better and better at turning LA away, and they had no answers at all in the last 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, in the last 5 minutes, I thought the Oilers were going to win. I just got the sense the Oilers are going to win this. In the last 10 minutes, Bruce, they just gave up one grade A shot. That was with 6:30 left when Arvidsson took a shot from, you know, kind of wing, and it was a good shot that Skinner got. But that was their last one in the game, 6.5 minutes to go. So, alrighty. Well, it's just, I thought we might be a little later tonight. It's just 12:15. So we got her done.
I really didn't want LA to tie this one up.
going to overtime.
Eight fifty start on a Sunday. You know. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I appreciate, Bruce. And I see quite a few of our readers appreciated you getting the grades out fast right after the game. So,
yeah,
not my style, but you got them out real quick. So, well done. And let's hope that there's one more 8 o'clock start coming up on Wednesday. I assume it'll be 8 o'clock. And then let's put these guys to bed. Mind you, it looks like Vancouver.
Doesn't it?
A miracle comeback they pulled off today, and they're up 3-1 as well. So could be a few more 8 o'clocks in our future.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
Right, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.